This is Music in Motion,
a podcast looking at how music moves us.
Forward, backward, and everywhere in between.
Produced by the crew at Kilo FM and KRXP FM in Colorado Springs.
Subscribe to this series to follow along as we journey through the music of our lives.
And welcome to Firsts, as we prove time travel is real. You don't need a DeLorean, no space portal. All you need is for someone to ask you the question, what was your first album? My name's Ross. I host the Kilo Morning Show. Sean Rock, host of the Kilo Rock Lunch.
What's up, Ross? Glad to be here. Glad to be talking about one of my favorite subjects. I've wanted to do a podcast on this for the longest time, and here we are.
It's awesome. We got a lot of help from a bunch of our friends in the music community. Run down some of the bands.
Sure thing. Guess what? We've got Shinedown popping in, Five Finger Death Punch popping in, Dreamers, Bad Wolves, Fire from the Gods. Those are heavy hitters, man.
They are. And Fire from the Gods is going to be the best of the podcast. Great story from their front man. Anytime it involves thieving and a Slayer album, you know it's going to be badass. We're also going to hear from Kilo RXP players Sid Black, Summer Justice.
Let's do it.
So the question was, what was your first album? And we leave it kind of loose because the first album, it means a lot of things. What was it, the very first album you got? Or the very first album that really made a difference in your life? Or even the first album that pulled some of these people into being musicians? We're going to start with a guy named Ben from the band Biffy Clyro. Scottish band, so they got the coolest accents on the entire podcast. He plays drums. He does some of the singing. And his first album.
The album that changed my life and set me on the correct path was Nevermind by Nirvana. I guess I was 14 when that came out, and I was listening to chart techno, some really bad stuff. So Nirvana really did get me on the correct path. And what they were doing was fairly simplistic punk rock, and it seemed doable. It seemed like something me and my friends could actually achieve, and it inspired us to start a band. So thank you, Nirvana, for changing my life.
I think Nirvana, Nevermind, would be a pretty common answer for millions and millions of people because they sold millions and millions of albums.
I wonder how many times we're going to hear that throughout this discussion.
Right, there are some pinnacle albums that are just a part of a whole generation's lives, and obviously Nirvana, well entrenched. Did he say he was listening to Shark Techno? What is...
I feel really bad because I don't know what he said, but I'll go with Shark Techno if that's what you got.
I'm going to put that on my Spotify, right? And again, best accent of the entire podcast, easily. Now we move on to the frontman from a huge band. This guy is a songwriter, a true musician, excellent lead singer from Shinedown, Brent Smith, and his first.
So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I had to have been in fifth grade, and it was probably 88, 87, 89. I can't even remember anymore. But it was Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses. One of my friends in school brought the tape to music class on a Friday because, you know, kids could bring their own music on Friday. And I remember he put it in. I think we got maybe a minute into Welcome to the Jungle and the teacher pulled it. But I was like, who is that? What is that? Ended up how I got it, though, was his older brother ended up getting it for me. I had an allowance. So the following Friday, I actually gave him the money to give to his brother. I believe he went to a record store called Record Bar. This is way back in the day. I got a cassette of it the following Monday. And yeah, it was one of those records that changed my life. I think it changed a lot of people's lives. But there's my story. There's my first record that I bought with my own money. To this day, my parents never knew I had that record. Obviously now, being in a band, they've let it slide. But yeah, Appetite for Destruction, Guns N' Roses.
And that there is another one of the common answers you're going to get from millions of people due to the fact he sold millions of those things.
Do you remember the first time you heard Appetite?
I do. And funny enough, I'm in a van with several people going to summer Christian Bible camp.
Wicked.
And we had a Walkman cassette copy of that, and then you could listen to like the first half and you have to hand it over and flip, and listening to it, everyone just stare at you to see your reaction, and when they were listening likewise, just staring at them. You know, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. But yeah, and it just felt like you're doing something wrong. Like Brent said, my parents had no idea I had that. I had a friend whose parents actually bought that record from him just to make sure he didn't have it.
Instead of just throwing it away, they bought it from him?
Yeah, bought it back from him. They were decent.
I don't know those parents.
Decent peoples right there. Yeah, there's, I think, four albums, at least for my generation, where it's like, as a kid, everyone had Michael Jackson's Thriller. Junior high, everyone had License to Ill. And then early high school, Appetite. And end of high school, Nevermind. It's like the four albums almost everyone I know had.
Appetite, I remember the first time really hearing it cranked was going to a pre-school starting party that my friend had in a barn. And he had a keg. And we played that album over and over and over again while we drank beer. And it was like setting the pace for the school year in 87, you know, which would have been my junior year in high school.
Wow, much cooler than going to Christian camp listening on a Walkman.
True.
Let's jump into it with one of the Kilo RXP players, our afternoon host, Mr. Sid Black, one of the most metal guys I know, as a matter of fact. So I'm very fascinated to find out what his first was.
My first records, they were cassette. I'm of that era, I guess. But I didn't buy them. And I'm not going to talk about the first ones I bought because generally I don't remember. But I could tell you the first ones that were gifted to me that just kind of woke me up to having my own music. I had a cousin who was a little bit older than me. She was getting rid of some cassette tapes. I don't know. I was probably 6 or 7 years old. But I remember it was in a grocery bag. She was like, do you want these tapes? I took them, went into my room, stoked because one, I had a tape player in my room. That was kind of a new concept then too. Opened up the bag of cassette tapes and one of them was the Back to the Future 2 original motion picture soundtrack, which the movie was awesome. Obviously big fan of the Back to the Future franchise at that time, but the tape wasn't like, is what we've come to know as a traditional soundtrack where it had like artists featured in the movie. This was legit like the soundtrack music of like the hoverboard chase, stuff like that. All about it. I felt like I was living in the movie just listening to this tape. The other tape was just a single cassette of Billy Joel's Weed Didn't Start the Fire. Which for whatever reason, I know a lot of people kind of rag on that era of Billy Joel or whatever, but that meant something to me as a kid. That song to this day, I love hearing it. When I hear it, it probably just brings me back to owning my very first set of music. And the last tape that was in there, which I think was just such a huge moment in my life, looking back on it now, obviously with a little bit of hindsight and the music I did kind of enjoy from that point forward and really what I've kind of end up doing with my life, it was Living Colors Vivid. The record, obviously, with the track Cult of Personality, which is one of the biggest rock songs of not only just of that time, but I think of all time. And Living Color, just such a pioneer of a band for what they were all about and who they were as individuals. I think that kind of stamped my musical interest from that point forward, getting into nothing but rock and metal and stuff like that. So yeah, that was that. It was nothing I bought. It was gifted to me. It was a grocery bag with three cassettes in it. It may have had more, but I guess those three are just, they really stick in my brain. So I guess I could say my first cassettes were Back to the Future 2, motion picture soundtrack, a single of Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire, and a cassette of Living Colors 1988 Vivid. Genuinely was a huge moment in my life and kind of shaped who I became from that day forward.
See what he did there? He pulled it off. He was crashing and burning. He danced around to the score to Back to the Future, and then Billy Joel, he's like, people rag on that era of Billy Joel.
The worst era of Billy Joel.
There's a lot of bad Billy Joel out there, but then totally redeemed himself with that Living Color pull off at the very end. Soundtracks, everyone had soundtracks. My parents wouldn't let me have metal music, really, so I'd have to subversively get it, you know, from soundtracks.
Yeah, I've discovered so much music through soundtracks easily, and I actually collect soundtracks.
I believe the next story also soundtrack related. We turn our attention to Nick. He's the lead singer and guitarist for The Dreamers. His first.
My first album was the Matrix soundtrack on CD. What's not to love about that album? Marilyn Manson, Rob Zombie, Deftones, Rage Against the Machine, just all the freakiest, weirdest, sci-fi friendly, heavy action music, and music that I still love to this day. So I think I'm lucky that a friend gave me that for my birthday back in 1999. What a time to be alive.
Whoa, he just disappeared right there.
That was so cool. Can they all do that?
I think so. Yeah, again, soundtracks, because yeah, you get so many badass bands and a full wide range. And like you said, every once in a while you'd find a band you never heard of and fall in love with them right there, huh?
For some reason, the 90s, mid-90s, and then early 2000s had some of the best soundtracks.
Next up is Tommy Vext. He's the lead singer for the band Bad Wolves. And talk about an interesting childhood. Can you call it an interesting childhood? What would you call it?
Unique. Let's go with that. Unique and tough.
Yeah, find out more about this guy. So I'm very curious what this badass first album is. Tommy Vex is first.
So I'm trying to think of the first album I bought. I believe it was, I think the first CD that I got was the Crow soundtrack with Brandon Lee, the first one.
It's a good one.
And it's a classic movie, like kind of, it's like gothic and metal soundtrack. And they were just like tracks that blew me away. It was my introduction to Pantera. I had been exposed to the grunge scene before I got truly into metal. You know, my cousin was a huge metalhead and I love this movie. So me and all my friends went to go see See the Crow. We were all obsessed with it. And I got the soundtrack and The Cure. It opens up with The Cure. And there's songs from Stone Temple Pilots and Nine Inch Nails, Rage Against the Machine, Pantera. It's just dope. To me, that record was where I seriously started to look up more of the bands. Before that, I had kind of been into like bands like Green Day and Aerosmith, you know, and I kind of got introduced to the Beatles and classic rock by family members. And yeah, the Crow soundtrack was definitely, it was a vibe, you know, it was a vibe. I'm just trying to think of that time. It's like such a time capsule. The songs and, you know, 1992 was a year, was it like a couple years later was this huge boom in hip hop and heavy metal. So it really was a good introduction for all the things that were coming, which would be like Pantera's Far Beyond Driven and the Downward Spiral from Nine Inch Nails and then Korn's self-titled debut album, which also came out. So it definitely set the tone for me to really grasp over the next two, like, and develop my audio appreciation over the next couple of years. So yeah, I always look fondly on that. I remember trying to get tickets to go see The Crow and we were too young and we had to convince our friend's mom to come with us as our chaperone. And there's a scene where the bad guy's girlfriend's taking a shower and you can see her ass or whatever, which is like nothing. But I remember being mortified. I was like, Matt's mom's gonna kill us, you know? Yeah, fond memories and introductions. So movie soundtracks. It's probably one of the greatest movie soundtracks of all time, for sure. The Crow soundtrack.
There you go. That's proof right there. Did you feel him? He moved in time.
He moved in time, and it smells like Hot Topic and JNCO jeans all of a sudden. I think it's funny because that whole era was what led into nu metal, just the rise of nu metal. And then I would say like Bad Wolves at this point, a lot of those bands are like post-nu metal sound. And so it's interesting how that had such a big influence on him, probably, really.
It's a game changer. On we go. Another Keto RXP player, but she's not reading news. On Keto's morning show, she's running her own morning show on RXP, Summer Justice, and her first.
It was 1996, and I was painting my sister's toenails. She was older than me, and she used to make me paint her toenails. And we were watching the movie Fear. I probably shouldn't have been watching this scene, but the roller coaster scene. And that song in the background was amazing. It just gave me goosebumps right away. I had to know what it was. So I watched until the end of the credits and wrote down the band and the song, which was the Sundays with their cover of Wild Horses. I knew I wanted to get a CD, but I knew my parents wouldn't buy it for me. So I started to go door to door in my neighborhood and I offered to mow lawns or pick weeds or clean up their yard, whatever they needed done. Some people didn't pay me, but I did earn enough money to purchase a CD. I asked my dad for a ride to Media Play. And as soon as I set foot into that store, it was like magic. There were CDs, galore, posters. It was like eye candy, and I didn't know how to browse for a CD, so I asked for help, and a nice gentleman helped me find the Sundays album Blind. And I walked up to the register with money that I had earned myself and paid for that bad boy. I was like 13. I'll never forget the feeling of ripping open that cellophane, taking out the CD sleeve, going through it like a book, and then, of course, putting it in my CD player for the first time. I put that song on repeat. I probably listened to it 8 times that day.
That's great. She should have done nails door to door.
I know. That would have been a little easier. Made I like how she remembers that some people didn't pay her. Never forget.
I didn't catch that. She's still holding a grudge. So yeah, a little erotica scene from a Marky Mark movie. Her inspiration there. I thought the most erotic scene in that movie was Marky Mark was punching his own perfect chest. And you know, Summer proves right there how nice of a person she is, right? She didn't even think about stealing an album.
She's also, like, she wrote it down when I would have never done that, been so organized that I write something down to remember it. It's great.
Of course, stealing music has been a thing since music first started. And nowadays, stealing music involves borrowing a friend's password to Spotify, basically,
true.
Right?
Yeah.
But long ago, you actually had to get that physical product. And a lot of people, unfortunately, kind of had to start there. If financial things, or I got a little lifty on a few albums because, again, my parents wouldn't kick me any money to buy cool albums. So it was badass. I had to steal it.
Wow. I know something about you now.
A little bit. That was the dark side of me. I'm not the only one. Case in point, Five Finger Death Punch frontman Ivan Moody. A great first from him.
I actually am guilty of stealing my very first vinyl. My Uncle Tom actually had given me a vinyl for Christmas. Two of them, excuse me. One was Styx, Kilroy was here, which I absolutely loved because Tommy Shaw and Dennis DeYoung, the singers of Styx, actually helped to show me how to better do harmonies within rock and roll. At that time, harmonies were a big deal. There were bands like Fleetwood Mac and Moody Blues, who I'd grown up on, you know, even... Again, I mean, there were lots of, even bands like Air Supply, you know, I mean, as crazy as it is, Hall & Oates. Those harmonies were really what caught my ear as a singer. And Styx helped me develop that. The second album I had gotten that same day from my uncle was Men at Work, Business as Usual. I thought it was just, The Land Down Under was like the theme. I mean, that flute was just, it was so catchy and so ridiculously fun that I had to have it. So anyway, back to me stealing my vinyl. So I had went into the store and they had Twisted Sister, Stay Hungry. It was brand new at the time, actually. And Dee Snider was going through the system thing with the parental advisory stickers. So anyway, I was just so interested in Dee and the way that he had shown up to court and the way he looked and everything else. I had to have the record, and I had no money. So I actually walked into a CD store, and I went to use the restroom, because back then they actually allowed you to use the bathrooms in stores. And I shoved Stay Hungry in the back of my belt, in my pants, up the back of my shirt, and I was walking out and the alarm went off and I flipped out and I ran. I got home. I was about a half a mile away from my house. No cops, nobody busted me. Surprised as hell, but I got home and the record had been cracked in two from running with it in my underwear. So there are a couple examples of my introduction to music as well as thievery. So long live rock and roll.
Yeah, who wasn't fascinated by the picture of Dee Snider?
So if you've ever seen Five Finger Death Punch live, Ivan Moody changes clothes like every couple of songs. He changes shirts, and it reminds me of Twisted Sister.
Oh, glass shatters.
Yeah. It's like how amazing these bands influence, you know, these artists, these newer artists, so much. And maybe it's little things like that, you know, that you pick up on.
Another great story. We're going to have the best of the podcast here in a few. We'll turn our attention to another tale of stolen property as Fire from the Gods will join us for our but last of the day. Man, time is running out. I'll tell you what, we're almost out of time, but I want to hear your first album, because you're very much family oriented. You got a bunch of cool people in your family, so I know there's a lot of influence. You're pretty diverse when it comes to music. So I'm thinking someone gave you your most influential album. Album or something. That's what I'm going to lean to. Sean Rock, your first album.
So my first album is probably going to surprise you, Ross. It was around Christmas time, 81. I had been given a gift certificate to go to Sound Warehouse in Albuquerque. I'd already been given, I think it was For Those About to Rock and Fair Warning.
Nice.
1981 is a great year for music, for rock music, right? So my parents drove me to Sound Warehouse. I got to go in, and it's weird they let me run in there by myself. Like, oh, you know, back in the day when they didn't worry so much about kids, they're like, yeah, go ahead, it's fine. Just go in that record store alone, it's fine. But anyway, this cover caught my attention, and I knew that this was an important album somehow, but I grabbed Journey's Escape. That was my first record or album. I took it home that day, from day to night, like even while my parents were sleeping. I listened to it nonstop. I memorized every song on that album, because the lyrics are the inner sleeve, right? They're all on the inner sleeve. So you could just sit there, listen to it over and over again, learn all the lyrics. Little did I know that half of the songs would end up on the radio and we'd know them anyway, because we'd have to hear them so much. So Journey Escape, my first album.
It's so funny you say that, because my older sister was the first to get a stereo in the house. And so when she was gone one day, I remember, because she wouldn't let you touch it, you know, it's hers. But gone one day, I saw her rummaging through her stuff and going through her 8-tracks. And I came across that Journey album, and then the cover was striking. It's unbelievable. And I was like, what is this alien orb thing? So I remember putting it in and hearing it, is like, this is not what I expected at all.
Not at all.
Awesome. Hey, well, let's see. We're almost out of time, but we got time for Best of the Podcast, as this is a great story. You feel AJ go through time back to the day he invaded the FYE, which is For Your Entertainment. I'm not familiar with the store.
But always in malls, remember? They were always in the malls.
That's right. A great story. The Best of the Podcast. AJ from Fire from the Gods, you're first.
I don't remember the first one, but I will tell you one that stuck out in my mind that I always remember. A CD that I stole when I was about 16, 17. So there was this FYE near my house. And, you know, if you guys are old enough to remember, back in the day, new music would come out on Tuesdays and not Fridays. And new records would be released, like full-on CDs and that would be released on Tuesdays. And so this one Tuesday, God Hates Us All by Slayer was coming out. At the time, I wasn't even the hugest Slayer fan. You know, I dug all the, you know, Rain and Blood and, you know, all those big, like, Slayer hits. But I wanted to get my, like, first real Slayer record, you know, and it was God Hates Us All. So I went to the FYE and I walked in, and I think these people, they already knew me. They already knew that I was notorious for coming in there and stealing shit. So they, they had the security guard on me immediately. And I was like, you know what? I'm daring. I'm a kid. I'm like, I'm invincible. I'm like, I'm going to get this record, because all my friends that were like metalheads, like, were in the Slayer, and I wanted to be down and be like, yo, I got my Slayer record. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't like a burn Slayer CD that someone made for me. Like, I actually went and got one. So I went into the shop and immediately beelined it for the metal section. And, you know, then you pick through the letters and I saw S. And so I'm looking, you know, I stopped and I saw Slipknot too. So I was like, all right, let me just stop real quick and, you know, look at the Slipknot CDs. You know, I've had them all anyway because I'm a huge Slipknot fan. But, you know, so I peruse, then I go back a little bit, then I see Slayer. And I see God Hates Us All. And I immediately just jacked it. Security, the whole big apparatus that they had on it that would have the security strip and everything, because before I would go on there and I would methodically, like, maneuver the CD out of it. I would break the I was terrible. But so I ran around the shop, immediately tried to get out the store. Security guards clocked it and he comes rushing at me and I just dodged him, man. I was like, I should have been in the NFL for this one, man. I just totally, like, dodged him, spun, held the CD like it was a football, not a proper football that I play, but an American football, and I just gunned it for the door. I made it free and clear, but in the street where that FYE is really, really crowded, but I just maneuvered through the crowd, and I was out, man, and, you know, I felt so much satisfaction. And after that, I think about a year later, that FYE closed, so I really never went in there again after that one. That was just way too daring and bold and crazy, but I had my Slayer album and I was completely satisfied with myself because God Hates Us All was dope. I know it's an underrated Slayer record, but I think it was absolutely sick. Big up Slayer and all those guys, man. I love you, dudes. Thanks for the memory. Peace.
Ross, one takeaway from that is that was 9/11. That's when God Hates Us All came out.
Wow.
There's a few albums that came out on 9/11.
Yep, Tuesday, September 11th, yeah, 2001.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So that came out. POD's Satellite had come out on Tuesday, 9/11. There's probably others. But
I think a Machine Head dropped on that day, too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting, though, that you're a kid, so it's very just like, yeah, whatever. He's still just going and stealing on 9/11. It's real interesting that set flashing back to all of that, really.
Right. You can just feel time rip by. It's the power of music. You can conquer time. That's pretty cool. What a great story. What a bunch of great stories. Matter of fact, we're out of time. We got plenty more artists, though, who want to share their stories. So I smell a sequel. What do you think, Sean?
I'm for this. I'm enjoying these stories so much, and they're so relatable. We can all relate to this stuff, you know?
Thanks for listening to Firsts.
Make sure to link up with us to our playlist, to our socials. Everything is linked down below where you're listening to this podcast.
Thanks for listening to Music in Motion.
In this series, we'll cover how music moves us, influences us, and changes us.
Past, present, and future.
We hope you take this ride with us.